Hey folks, welcome to my first audio exclusive podcast. In today's episode, I'll be talking to the founder and CEO of Finnovating, a fintech platform connecting startups and companies in the financial and crypto sector. During the interview, we jokingly call it the Tinder of fintech. Rodrigo was invited to the MIT Fintech Conference and kindly agreed to participate in a podcast episode on my channel during his MIT visit. This is Rodrigo Garcia de la Cruz. Enjoy the conversation. Thank you so much for joining the interview.
Thank you very much to you for the invitation.
Is it your first time at MIT?
Yes, my first time.
How do you like it so far?
It was amazing. I think it's the best place in the world for innovation, for technology. So, and it's global and it's amazing.
So you just attended the FinTech conference. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it's one of the main FinTech conference in the States and probably in the world. Managed by the MIT students and MIT community. I had the great opportunity to participate in one panel. The panel was related with B2B fintechs, how the fintechs are managing the relationship with corporations, SMBs, SMEs, etc. And it was fantastic because it's what I'm doing right now, connecting companies. So
very much connected. Yeah. I want to ask you, so something that's currently very trendy are NFTs. Are you a fan of NFTs? What do you think about them?
I find about them, but I think it's like blockchain and Bitcoin like 7 years ago. There is a big boom.
It's a hype.
It's a hype. I think after this hype, there are going to happen things very good for other kind of businesses.
Like actual applications instead of just fun stuff.
That's right. So like, for example, Bitcoin was, you know, a boom at the beginning. And after that, we realized that there was a technology called blockchain that is going to change the world in the next years. So I think NFTs is cause and effect from blockchain, using for special things, and is going after that is going to use we're going to use for tickets, we're going to use for art, we're going to use for a lot of things. But now there is a little bit of trend, and
it is a trend. So you're in charge of the Finnovating. Can you tell us what Finnovating is, how you founded it, and what your mission is?
Yeah, so everything started 10 years ago when I decided to leave my banking experience in banks like Citibank, Barclays Bank, and Santander, you know, very big banks. Mm-hmm. And I realized, because I have my track record in engineer, that the technology was going to change the way of doing finance today. So I started to go through the fintech. I started to launch some fintechs. I started to invest as an angel investor in some companies. And I also started to connect them with the regulation, because there is something in the fintech world that is the regulation. Most of these activities had to be regulated or are already regulated. So, because at the end you are moving money, you are moving cash. So at the end, this is why the supervisors and regulators exist. So for this reason, I also started to create some different associations. The Spanish FinTech Association, that now I'm the president, and also I was connecting and creating the European Association, that is connecting more than 15 countries, and also the Ibero-American FinTech Association, connecting all the countries in Latin America. At the end, I'm working with more than 50 countries in terms of FinTechs, what is happening with the ecosystem. So 2 years ago, I realized that we need to do a step forward. We need to go forward and do something different, because at the end, the startups need to collaborate with big corporations to deliver the services. On the other side, they need capital from the investors, and also they need to connect with other startups to growth. So I realized that I have to do something else. And this is the reason that I want to help all the ecosystem creative innovating. So what is Finnovating after this story? It's like a LinkedIn for fintechs. So it's we call it matching as a service platform, because what we want to do is to connect the whole ecosystem of fintechs that today are 50,000 in the world, 50,000 fintechs, almost 1,000 in the States, with a lot of corporations and with a lot of investors, helping them to raise capital, to share ideas, to connect with corporations, to open markets, etc.
So it's a bit like, let's say, Tinder, but for fintech companies.
Absolutely. In fact, we inspire in Tinder, and one of the functionalities, the finger.
Oh, you have the swiping thing?
Absolutely. We can show you later on if you
want. So I can swipe left and right on fintech companies.
Yes. So what we are doing is, if you are a corporation, you can see, you know, fintechs that is going to match with you, or investors. So can you say yes, no? There is a double check. You can start talking.
Amazing. I really like that approach. I said it as a joke. I didn't actually think it was
real. It's happening. It was one of my ideas, because part of my partner said, Rodrigo, what are you doing with a Tinder for fintechs? And I said, I have to do it, because it's amazing. It sounds very interesting. And now we have launched like a month ago, and starting to, the most complicated thing is to create the algorithms of matching. That's that, because at the end, the technology is quite easy. The more complex thing is how you are going to create algorithms to identify the real, you know, pairs for companies, you know, but so that's very interesting.
Yes, and then when a match was made, then they go on business date, or how should we call it? So introduce them so they can potentially work together?
Yeah, the idea is, for example, for investors. Investors, they have their own strategy of investment. For example, I'm going to invest in B2B companies, in payment companies in Europe or in the States, and with this size. So we are trying to identify companies that fix with them and introduce them to show these companies. And if they are double check, they can start talking, and maybe they are going to invest in them. The same for corporations, that a lot of banks, they need to identify new business to collaborate or to co-create. And what we're going to do is to anticipate and show them these potential companies. Mm-hmm. At the end, is the same that when you go to a presential event or a presential meeting or conference, that you show people that you never think that they were exist interesting things. We want to do it digital. It's like Tinder for people, but for corporations. Mm-hmm. So this is the idea, to connect them and to try to show companies that they want to know, but they don't really know.
So the word Finnovating, and I really like the name, I think it's genius. So it's like fintech and innovating matched together.
Yeah.
It's very smart.
Yes, and it was easier to find it, because when you have to launch a company, you have to think about the name. Mm-hmm. Interesting name. And also that the name internet is going to be open.
The domain name.
That's a tricky one. That's a tricky one.
Yeah. Yes, I had that issue when I started my company. I came up with a word, and then some guy had it already registered, and he refused to sell it to me. This is very annoying.
And what did you do?
Well, I changed the name. Because an internet domain is so important in the end.
Yeah. And the logo. Because at the beginning we had another logo, and it was not similar, but quite similar, or a little bit similar than Thomson Reuters. Mm. And they wrote us and tell us, your logo is quite similar to us. And like 15 folios of telling me that they have to change the logo. So I was talking with some lawyers and tell me, you can go against them, but maybe in 1 year you lose, you know, the discussions, and you have to change. So you have to change right now. So we change it, and now I prefer the current logo than before logo. But you have to check not only the name, but also the how the logo is. You cannot copy the logo of Nike and do it your own company, because Nike is going to follow you.
Exactly. So that's maybe also some good advice for people who want to start companies. Domain and the logo, that needs to be fixed first, and then you can start your company with that name and logo.
Absolutely. That's important. Because and also think about if the name sounds good in other languages.
Yes.
So that's another point, because maybe in your language is good and in other language sounds very, that is not appropriate.
I think that is something also parents should think about when they name their children, because sometimes they have beautiful names that are completely unpronounceable in other languages.
Absolutely, it's the same.
Yes. And so Finnovating has grown quite a lot. So you have a very big team of, how many people are we in total now?
In total, we are a lot of people. Really, we have almost 20 people, but we have a lot of students, some ambassadors all around the world. So we are, the whole community are more than 50 people. And the traction of the company is just in 9 months, because we launched last May, more or less, May, June. Now we have companies, active companies in the platform from more than 110 countries. I think it's 112 right now. So it's very, very global from the beginning, because we are, and obviously after the pandemic, we are digital, more digital than before. and companies can do business globally. So you can be a bank from Israel looking for a fintech from Mexico or is in the States or Singapore. So this is global and it's amazing.
Can you give us some examples of the craziest companies or startups that have reached out to you in the past?
There are some very interesting business. I saw everything, but the problem is the success you are going to get. So if you want to launch a business, there are some different things. So is there something very, very new, you have the opportunity to be the first, but investors, you have to convince them because you are new. You are very new and no one knows if you're going to work or not. If there is a business model that is working in other countries and you can copy, probably it's more a question of execution. And it's going to be probably easier to get to raise money because they are going to say, okay, if the other country is working and the investors are putting money, if you do it here, probably you're going to have success.
So a trick could be that instead of just coming up with something completely new, you can find something that somebody else did somewhere else. That isn't like maybe scalable that quickly, so and then you can do it in your own country.
Yeah, and also to do it better. The innovation maybe is how can I do this better? But if you are very, very innovative one, you can do it as innovative. Innovative is very new because you cannot find B2B platforms. You can find peer-to-peer platforms like LinkedIn. You can find Tinder, you know, for matching people. You can find Facebook, that is a social platform. But at the end, there is not for corporations. So this is very new, and so that's amazing. It's a very amazing way, but it's more complicated to convince an investor that this is going to happen. So, but on the other side, if you want to have, probably it's going to be easier if you say, okay, let me tell you, for example, a case. There is a business model that is the revenue-based finance. What is this? Is a way of financing startups from e-commerce, and you are financing them their marketing campaigns. Instead of using, you know, the data of this, of the scoring, the typical financial scoring, they are only using the scoring of the how are you going to get more clients using these marketing campaigns. So at the end, their data is the result of the marketing campaign, and they give you money only for marketing campaigns. So it's another way to connect the funds or the money you need with the result you're going to have. I'm not talking about like banks that I want to show you how is your financing, how you're going to get the money. So it's absolutely different. What has happened in the States works very well, and a lot of countries in Europe do it also, and they are growing a lot because also it's a momentum. There is a timing that everyone wants to be in that kind of business model. For example, and in the fintech has been developing through the time. At the beginning, the payments were, you know, the hottest sectors. After that were the lending. After that were the wealth tech about how to save money. Now there are another kind of lendings. Obviously, everything related with cryptocurrencies is becoming crazy. So, but timing is very, very important when you have to launch a company.
Absolutely. So they looked at some statistics. What are the most important factors for starting companies? Typically, we'd expect. Maybe you wouldn't even think about timing. You would probably say, okay, the idea has to be top. But they ranked and they figured out that the timing is the number one factor, followed by the team, and then only comes the actual idea that you have.
I would say that the first thing is the team, because the team has going to be able to pivot to be on the timing. You know what I mean?
True.
So the first thing is the team. And nowadays, much more than ever. In fintech, I was following what was the main problem of this sector during the last 10 years. 10 years ago, the problem was the regulation, because sometimes to get a new license or to use Bitcoin or whatever a new technology or activity was very complicated because you were sometimes out of the law. So the problem was that. 5 years ago, the problem was financing. The first problem, I'm not saying that at the beginning was the problem, but the main problem was financing, and the regulation went to the second side because regulation was trying to traction and the financing, the money was the most important thing. And nowadays, it's not only for fintech, but I think it's the whole sector of innovation is to find the right talent, to find the right partners, you know, because one of the first, I want to say, reasons that companies fail is misunderstanding about the partners. So it's very important. If you're going to go alone, it's going to be very hard. So you have to go with other colleagues, with other partners. But be sure that both or all of them have the same vision. in the short, medium, and long term, because otherwise it's going to be a nightmare. Yeah. So this is the first, and the second, how you are going to be able to attract talent to your company, because probably you are not going to pay them like Google.
Yeah.
So that's also very important.
You have to offer them something else, either shares or a cool job that they just want to do.
That's right. But this is the most interesting thing of launching a company, how you are going to sell the motion, sell the future, and the people believe in you. This is the leadership, that people understand that they're going to take a risk to be with you instead of staying, you know, in a big corporation or a big technology company, because you are going to change the world together. So I think this is the most beautiful thing when you launch a company.
Which ideas or directions in fintech or blockchain in general have the most potential for new startups? Do you have some ideas? Let's say if you were just coming out of college and you didn't have Finnovating, didn't have anything, what would be the startup that you would go for now?
Depending of your age.
So let's do it. 5 year, 10 year, 15 years old, 20 years old.
Yes, that's right. No, I said that because if you have 25 years old, probably you don't know much about finance.
Yeah.
So how do you are going to create a complicated, I don't know, open banking, fintech, or robot advisor, a quantum robot advisor with artificial intelligence in markets? You don't know about it. So yeah, it's not easy for someone without experience in finance to create something complex. So this is why, if you have under 30s and you never work in finance or in insurance, probably it's going to be difficult, or insurance. I'm not saying a bank, I'm saying a startup or fintech, etc. So at the beginning it's going to be difficult. So you can start with other, you know, things related with blockchain, NFTs, related with financing, e-commerce, so it's going to be easier. If you have some experience and you are under 40s, you probably can launch any kind of fintech. And if you are the CEO and the founder, or also if you are very good in a technology, you can launch with 25 a company, but with someone who has this knowledge, you know, so you can maybe mix your knowledge on digital or technology with someone that has, you know, the knowledge of the business model. So,
and experience, yeah.
And experience. So what I'm saying is that it's very important to connect all these dots in order to launch this kind of companies, because when you see the average age of a CEO of a fintech is more than 30 years old. So, but no, I'm not saying, but the rest of the people is going to be young people working on this company.
And obviously, most people fail with their first company, which is totally normal. But what do you think is like the highest success thing for somebody who really has no experience? Some crypto exchange or some, what could one do at the moment? NFTs?
NFTs. I will say, working about, NFTs, blockchain. I always said, if you know something about something, try to hybrid with other things. So don't try to go to, because now everyone is talking about revenue-based finance or payroll advance or whatever thing, I'm going to do that. Maybe you don't have the experience and you're not going to be enough motivated to do it. So I will try to say, I love NFTs. I am a really master in NFTs. How can I do business with NFTs? And how could launch, for example, a fintech with NFTs? Can I do a wallet for paying NFTs? Can I do lending for NFTs? Can I use the NFTs to the savings? So building through the what you know, and building and pivoting different business models is the best way to do it. And also, if you don't have this knowledge, look the knowledge to be with you.
So you have to find some kind of competitive advantage that you might have for your experience or knowledge, and then use that to actually start something.
That's right. This is why when you launch something and you are going to have success, this is the first class of entrepreneurship, is what you are going to solve. What is the problem what you are going to solve with your company? So at the end, this is why the fintech starts. The first fintech in the world was PayPal. Why PayPal? Because they solve in the financial industry one problem. That is how I'm going to pay someone through the internet, because it wasn't secure at that moment. So they create the first fintech, and there were people with a lot of knowledge to do it. What I want to say is that if you have another experience in markets, you can create something that solves this problem. But if you are younger, that you have, you know, 20 years experience in banking, what you have to do is, I want to buy NFTs, I don't know how to do it. I'm going to try to help, or I'm going to do something to improve this process. So for me, the thing is always thinking about what is the problem you solve, and started to do it. It doesn't matter the age, it doesn't matter the sector. If you are understanding that the things can be done the different way, it's, I think it's the right way to do it.
Absolutely. It's interesting when you think about NFTs, in some way it's a bit like modern art. Anything can have any price with the right marketing.
I think there is too much marketing. And you have to take care about what you read and what you follow. Think about when you read an article in internet saying that a girl in whatever place in the world create this and sold it for 10 million euros. And say, I'm going to do it also. But maybe it's one people or two people or three people. So what I want to say is that sometimes you don't have to follow all the noise. I think it's good to be, because you have to be, because this is the future. We are building the future with the NFTs, but not try to, because probably you're going to lose a lot of money. If you do it and you sell it, it's okay. But if you want to invest, you have to take care, because probably there is another technology in 2 years that is going to change and how it's going to happen. Because I had experience with the tokens, with the tokenization of the companies, with the ICOs, like 4 or 5 years ago, and it was like NFTs now. The ICOs, it was going to change the world. Everybody was launching ICOs. A lot of people raised a lot of money, but the rest not. And if you invest in companies and the companies disappear, and like the DAOs, you know, the DAOs, also you have to take care. You have to be, because it's the future, but take care about how you are going to manage it.
So in terms of, you know, most people, when they think about fintech, if they're or just cryptocurrencies, they just think about buying, selling Bitcoin or something simple like that, or buying NFTs. And just to make sure that we're legally protected, we're not giving investment advice here. So what is your take? Do you think it's even worth investing money in any of these things, or is it better to save it? What would be your advice to young people who may have some spare money?
I would say that it's good to experiment with the new technology, with the new things. But it's an experiment. Don't put a lot of money in this, things that you don't understand well. But this is the basics, so that's very important. Also, I would say that if fintechs give us to the society is transparency, is information, is clarity, is accessibility for the young people, I would say that they understand more about fintechs, because at the end, if you want a bank in the mobile, if you want to save money in the mobile, if you want to pay in the mobile, if you want to understand whatever is happening, fintechs came for that. So I think it's a very good opportunity, because if you want to save $1 a day or $2 a day or $5 a day, you can do it with a fintech. Probably you are not going to be able to do it with a big bank. Probably in the future, the banks are going to copy these strategies and they are going to do it also. But for young people, digital natives, the fintechs are the perfect way to use the finance.
Absolutely. What is your take on China banning trading with or buying cryptocurrencies at all? Do you think it's a danger? Do you think this trend is going to continue with other countries?
The thing is that China is another world. It's like another earth in terms of financing, in terms of even in innovation. Why I say that? Because when we launched the Finovation, we identified the whole companies in the world, all fintechs in the world. But we want to go to China, it was like another world. Not only for the language, but also with the access of internet, everything is different. So what is happening there is quite different from the rest. On the other side, China has changed a lot in a very short term, because they came from very, very old finance, and now they have a very, very modern finance in everything. The thing is that they have a good and a bad things, or I don't say bad things, but the good thing is that they have a very, very big market. So if you launch a company there, you maybe reach 100 million clients in very short term. That is very complicated in other countries, but because they are very big. So you can, any company could be a unicorn very, very short term, because it's very big, the market. But on the other side, you know, how to use the data, how to use even the rights of some people. It's not the same that the United States, Canada, Europe, that the governments are very worried about the protection, the data, protection, the rights of the people. So this is why what is happening in China is quite different from the rest. So at the end, it's depending of what the government wants to do. If they want to ban, you know, the bitcoins, because they want to do, they are going to do it. Something that probably out of China is going to have a lot of conversations, discussions, governments, regulators, the industry. China is going another way.
You know, it's interesting. They're not behind any country. The way people pay there is probably well ahead of the United States, where still to this day, often we have to use physical checks to pay someone, which in Europe, I mean, for you, you probably haven't used. I don't know, when was the last time you used a physical check?
I think never in my life.
Okay, that's good. But in the US, almost everybody still does that. And even if I get some refund from MIT, so my salary still obviously arrives in my bank account, that's good. But if they reimburse me for something, they still send me a physical check, a physical mail, that I then have to physically bring to the bank and cash it.
That's, how would I say, I would say ridiculous.
Yes. There's no other way of saying it.
There is no other way to say it. And overall, because we are talking about the first country in the world, you know, in terms of everything. So, but I think it's something that is very traditional. So, because I think the technology right now, I don't know, we are not talking about a blockchain, but we can use blockchain for tracking, you know, the checks and the papers, everything. But also, you know, in other countries, they are much more advanced. I think Europe in this term, in terms of finance, in fact, Southern Europe, for example, France, Spain, they are very, 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 very modern in terms mm-hmm. of B2C banking, in terms of retail banking, they are leading the world. But I think it's something related with the tradition, because I think there are a lot of neobanks, a lot of challenger banks, a lot of fintechs that they can erase. However, I have to say also that probably the big banks, they also wanted to keep, you know, the checks, because this is the way that you can go to the branch and talk with you and maybe selling you a cross service or whatever.
Yeah, if they're making money, why would they change it in the end of the day?
That's right.
Yeah, I have a funny story. So I once got, I used to work in San Diego and I got some reimbursement there from the university in Switzerland. And so we were discussing, okay, how do I get the money? And I asked them if they could just send it to some account. And then you know what they did in the end? So I lived in Switzerland. They sent a physical check to Switzerland, which first I looked at it and I didn't know what it is because I had never seen a check in my life before. And I went to a Swiss bank and asked them if they could cash it. So there was a young guy sitting there. I think he had never seen a check. And then he asked his boss, who was a bit older. And his boss said, oh, I recognize this is like what we used to use like a long time ago. And then in the end, I had to go to some special branch where they had only one person in all of Switzerland in UBS, the largest Swiss bank, who is responsible for checks, which, you know, it's like a few times a day maybe. And I think it was a $200 check, and I think they charged me around $100 just to handle all of that.
So it's crazy.
It is insane. Yeah, but in Europe, we've made quite a lot of progress. So, for example, Revolut, Wise, formerly TransferWise, they do make it very easy to send money, not just within Europe, but also internationally.
Yeah.
Do you even think that at this point we need blockchain cryptocurrencies if it's becoming so easy within Europe at least to send money?
Yeah, in fact, the Revolut case is very, very interesting because they started with solving one problem we mentioned before, that if you want to travel foreign or around the world, they are going to give you a card that when you go to Mexico, this card is from Mexico. When you go yeah. to Spain, it's going from Spain. If you go to UK, it's from UK. So this is very easy because at the end, MasterCard or Visa is in the whole world.
Yeah.
So you have to convince them. The thing was, I have to convince these companies to give me a card that is going to be locally with these commissions are going to be very, very low. So they started with that and with a very good experience because this is everything about customer experience. And they start to grow a lot. And after that, they start to creating different kind of business models. Overall, with the pandemic, because no one is going traveling, so they have to react very, very quickly because otherwise they are going to lose the business because their business was when the people were traveling. So they start to create different kind of businesses. One of them was buying and selling cryptos very easily.
And cheaply.
And they are growing a lot with that. And they are creating a marketplace of services, very, very interesting. And it's not easy at all because competing in retail banking in Europe is quite complicated. Because if you go to Latin America, 60% of the people are underbanked. They are out of the banking because they don't want to be in the banks or because the banks they don't want them as a client. So there is other cases like Nubank, that is like the Revolut part in Brazil, and now it's growing in the rest of the Latin America. And they are giving to the users a finance way of living or a financing solutions. But in Europe, everyone has accounts. One or two accounts. So this is why I said that the Revolut and other kind of companies are doing especially good because it's not easy to compete in these areas because banks has a lot of power or tradition with the people.
So do you think that blockchain might make it easier for those people who haven't yet been reached by accessing bank accounts? I'm talking Latin America, Africa. Do you think they can accept these?
Absolutely, but we don't have to use the technology as a final thing. We have to use the technology as a bridge to get more better services. So we are here in MIT. We are talking about technology, but in this case, technology has to be the way to do better things. So obviously, if you want to send money to Africa or you want to send money to other places of the world, blockchain is going to be one of the best ways to do it, and more efficiently, cheaply. However, for the user, I don't mind if it's blockchain or whatever. I want to do it to send the money instantly and let things happen. Mm-hmm. So in this case, obviously, blockchain is going to change the world. Obviously, these technologies that are coming are pushing the traditional banks to do different things. In fact, for example, in Spain and other countries in Europe, you can send money in one day since 20, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. So it was something that you can do it, but you have to pay a lot of money to do it. Okay, so at the end, there were only the corporations that they can pay a little bit more to have the money in the same day through the different banks. With the blockchain, they started to run, and now in whole Europe, you can send the money in one day. And now what they are doing is they want to, or it's going to happen, is to launch money instantly in the whole Europe between the banks.
I think that's already works, right? Most of the banks that I have, I can do instant transfers.
Yeah, instant transfers to send money, mm-hmm. but in the whole region of Europe. So because they want to they want to run because they know that outside there are happening a lot of things. What is the problem? That when you are talking about the European community, it's easy because you are moving euros, but when you go out of Europe, the instant payments are, you know, it's
doesn't work.
So this is where blockchain is going to change the things.
For the end of the interview, I wanted to ask you, when was the last time you bought a concrete thing with using cryptocurrencies? Have you ever managed to do it? Like, I know that Tesla used to sell their cars, which you could buy with Bitcoin. Have you ever had the opportunity to buy something directly with cryptocurrencies?
Yes, I have a very interesting story. I paid the most expensive meal in my life.
The what?
A breakfast. The most expensive breakfast in my life. Why? Because I paid with one Bitcoin when Bitcoin was like €60 or $60. I paid. I spent, because I used at the beginning. I was very related with blockchain since the beginning, but I saw it as a technology, not as a way of transactions, not as a way of getting money or the speculation. Mm-hmm. This is why I'm not richer in terms of Bitcoin. But so I used to take Bitcoins, test it, pay with them, and I paid. And so this is why I had breakfast with 60 when Bitcoin was 60.
Which nowadays would be about like $50,000.
So this is why it was the most expensive breakfast of my life.
Well, I think one of the first known Bitcoin transactions was somebody ordered pizza. So I'm looking forward to the moment when we'll actually be able to buy things with real cryptocurrencies in real life. Mm-hmm. It'll be very fascinating. Yeah. Also, thank you for the discussion.
Thank you very much for the
and
invitation.
And I wish you a great time here at MIT and in Boston.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. This is the first audio-exclusive podcast so far, as we unfortunately had technical issues with the camera's memory card and couldn't recover the files. Nevertheless, I hope you give me whatever the equivalent is of a thumbs up on YouTube or on the platform that you're currently using. Also, don't forget to connect to Rodrigo on LinkedIn. Feel free to reach out to him if you have any questions or if you're interested in working with him in any way. Thank you so much for listening and take care until next time. Goodbye.